Hi, welcome to The Long View. It's been a while since The Long View has been produced, and I want to thank you for your patience and coming back. The Long View's purpose is to take a look at some ideas and discuss some ideas that will have an impact on us and our community 25 to 30 years out, not necessarily today. We don't necessarily come to a conclusion. It's really information that you could think about and, again, judge how it might impact you and your family 25 to 30 years out. Our guest today is Nick McCurry. Nick is the Bureau Chief for New Hampshire Emergency Medical Services in Concord, New Hampshire. Nick, welcome.
Thank you, Dave.
And a little bit of background so folks know where you come from and how you got to be Chief at the Emergency Medical Services.
Well, a little bit of background. I started in EMS in 1989 when I was going to school in Boston College. I did my nursing degree there. After I got out of BC, I still really liked emergency services, so I went and got my paramedic. So I'm a nurse and a paramedic. Worked for several years in the emergency department and really missed working on the street. So went back to the fire service in Guilford for many years, and just about the past year or so now, I've actually become the EMS chief for New Hampshire.
Excellent. And emergency medical services is a dynamic, we know it to be a very dynamic area right now. So that's what we'd like to talk about today, because it is changing so much. And I think people would like to be aware of how it's changing and where it's headed. So you've written that this idea of mobile integrated healthcare is an effort to provide the right care at the right time, in the right place, at the right cost, and it's causing the emergency medical services to change. Hasn't EMS always been changing?
EMS absolutely has always been changing. It's been very dynamic over the years. We've gone from really taking patients off the roadways and really driving them to an emergency department without much care happening at all. In fact, a lot of EMS services are actually partnered with or were run by funeral homes. And that has evolved over the years since the 60s and 70s. And we've really moved into taking the emergency department into the back of our ambulances. There are four different license levels in New Hampshire, and there are a few more across the country. But generally speaking, there's about four different levels. So that has allowed us to really tailor what a community wants for their care. But we really have taken the emergency department or the care that can be provided in an emergency department. And we've really moved that to the back of some of our ambulances. So it absolutely has been very dynamic. But one of the things that we get very concerned about, and because of our communities being very dynamic and their needs changing over the years since the 60s, our profession is very young. But the community's needs have changed. And really what this mobile integrated healthcare document is, and where we're really moving, there's more than 230, I think, programs across the country. And really what it is it's taking our EMS workforce, very educated group, we have communication systems, obviously we have vehicles, and it's really trying to provide a better care for our community, and it's more tailored for communities. So that's really what we're doing right now with this whole concept.
And that probably refers to this idea of the right care. For example, in Bedford, we have a number of senior citizen communities, resident communities. We have a number of nursing homes, long-term nursing homes.
Yeah.
And so that demand is probably bigger than some of the smaller communities who don't have those kinds of residences.
Absolutely. I mean, this care, this mobile integrated health care, is really providing the right care at the right time. Emergency medical services, the way it has developed over the years, is emergencies. Mm-hmm. Well, a small percentage of what we actually are responding to these days are true emergencies, but we're still a healthcare safety net. We're really unscheduled healthcare for a lot of people because many folks don't have a primary care physician. They're using emergency services, not only us, but emergency departments as their primary care doctor.
Wow.
So that really is not necessarily going to change. We're always going to be that safety net. But because we have many, many of our calls being non-emergency, this mobile integrated healthcare concept and the structure that we're putting into place in New Hampshire is really the opportunity for choices for our folks, for our communities. Really, when we respond, we can certainly take someone to a hospital if necessary, but really we need more tools in our toolbox, and that's where the right care at the right place at the right time and the right cost comes in. Because right now we can leave you at home, or we can take you to the emergency department. We don't have a whole lot of other tools. This structure is allowing us to do that, and we're really collaborating with many folks within the state, including the Home Care Association, on how do we do this and not duplicate. because that's a really important concept with us.
There's some interesting things that you just said there, because there are a lot of folks who, some a lot of senior citizens and a lot of stay-at-home moms, who daycare centers, who rely on emergency medical services to give their family, their charges, that kind of care when it's needed. One of the things, though, I think that you mentioned was the different types of care are going to require different types of skills.
Yes.
I think many of us have always looked at going to the emergency room, as you indicated, many of us go to the emergency room when it's an emergency. Don't look at EMS as being their primary care physicians, which is what I think I heard you say.
And that is an interesting concept, is that, yes, many people do only go to the emergency department when they have an emergency, but there are also a lot of other folks that use emergency care, and not necessarily an ambulance, but emergency care is provided by that emergency department, walk-in care center, urgent care center.
Sure.
Because they either can't get into their physician's offices in a timely manner, and that has more to do with the supply-demand, or they just don't feel that they can wait as long as it takes to get into their primary care physician. So there are many reasons that people will use the emergency department, and it runs the whole gamut from they don't have that kind of primary care to it just may end up taking too long, or they don't feel like it's appropriate to go to their physician's offices.
So this would be dependent upon the community's need.
Absolutely. One of the cornerstones of mobile integrated healthcare is really doing a community needs assessment. And that's part of the structure that we're working on putting into place now with a protocol and an application process for the state for the EMS services in the state that want to be able to do this. That's a cornerstone, because one of the things that we don't want to do is we don't want to duplicate services. If services are within a community, we want the community to be able to use those. This is really a partnership for us. It's a partnership between EMS, the home care organization in the community, and the acute care hospital. So it's really trying to figure out where the gaps are, and that's what this is really more about. It's not just adding another service that is a duplication of what's already there. That's a very important piece of this, because that is not what we're here for. This is for a lot of our patients that we go, and it's not quite an emergency. You don't necessarily need an ambulance, but we want to be able to give them another option. We want to be able to help them get into their physician's offices or take them somewhere else besides the emergency department. CMS actually wrote an article.
CMS?
Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services.
Okay.
Basically Medicare.
Okay.
Actually took a look at if we were just able to take our patients to a different location besides an emergency department, it would save a significant amount of money. And that's just one aspect of mobile integrated healthcare and providing us different tools. So some of it is making sure that we have the ability to take some people somewhere else, or potentially even say, you know what, you're not serious enough to need an ambulance, but here's another two or three options for you. Whether we get them hooked up with home care in their community or an urgent care center, a lot of those things are still being worked out. But it absolutely is a collaborative effort to really try to save people the ride in the ambulance if they don't need it. Many folks who even do have insurance, they have a deductible.
Mm-hmm.
So to take them from their home in an ambulance to an emergency department that they may not need, that still is going to generate a bill for them, mm-hmm. And potentially a rather large deductible.
When you think, though, I think some people who are watching, will probably make an assumption that, well, if I'm going to lower my costs, which you referred to, if I'm going to lower my cost, that potentially will lower the quality of my service as well, because I know if I'm going to go to the emergency room, I know that my service is going to be very good. How can I be assured that that's what's going to happen in the back of the van?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, and that's a very good point to hit on. We're not necessarily talking about mobile integrated healthcare as purely transport somewhere else. Those level of services already exist. So really what we're trying to do is have people go to a location that's more appropriate. Mm-hmm. It may not be appropriate for them to sit in an emergency department for several hours to find out that they really need to go to their primary care or get hooked up with a particular medication or things to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those lower level of medical issues that don't necessarily need the very specialized service within an emergency department. So that goes back to the right care. Right. And that's really getting somebody hooked up with really what they need, which may end up being an urgent care center. So it's really giving us the tools to be able to work with our communities, give our you know, our citizens, what they really need, as opposed to a one-size-fits-all option, which mm-hmm. is what we've used for many years now.
Now, I think many people are probably aware of the fact that some emergency medical services personnel mm-hmm. can distribute drugs, pharmaceuticals, in the van. And then the other question yep. that's part of that is, they are also connected, many of the vans are connected, the ambulances, are connected mm-hmm. directly to emergency centers.
Yes. What we end up happening, let me deal with the medication
sure.
piece. We can't distribute medication. Okay. We can administer medication for patients that we'll take to an emergency department. Generally speaking, that's the scenario we're okay. going to have. There are other states that are putting nurse practitioners in ambulances that do expand what that EMS service is able to do. I'm not sure where we're going to go in this state. We've really got to take a look at what our needs are, and that's really a local decision
okay.
to find out what are they willing to do, what do they want to do, and that's going to take more discussion. At this point, it's really just, it's EMS and trying to give people a few more options. But we want to set up the framework so it's a very local decision, because obviously the needs in Colebrook and Manchester and Bedford are going to be very different. So we don't want to make the ability to do this very narrow, because we do want to make sure that those community needs are met.
The mention of Colebrook mm-hmm. And it's being different than Manchester brings up the idea of some of the emergency or some of the hospitals mm-hmm. That were in the Medicare system have been withdrawn from the Medicare system. I think there are four hospitals that were withdrawn. I believe that's what they were. And some of those mm-hmm. some of those hospitals served the rural communities mm-hmm. of the state. Is the rural component of our folks, our residents in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. is that a major part of this plan?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, one of the pieces to this is the 200 and some odd programs across the country, they focused in on a few different populations. When you look at some of the information, once again, from CMS, the Medicare and Medicaid, they really are saying that about 5% of our patients account for more than 50% of the billing. Mm-hmm. annually for CMS. Well, so we've got a very specific patient population to be able to look at, and some of it is within a rural community. It's providing that service that they may not be able to get within their community, and it's partnering with the other organizations to hopefully keep them out of the emergency department if we can.
Excellent. Well, I ask this question, will emergency medical services cover the primary care physician's responsibilities in those rural areas?
No, we are not going to expand our scope of practice. We're going to expand our sphere of practice. Basically, it's using EMS in a different location. We know the patients within our community, generally speaking, mm-hmm. that need a little bit of extra help in partnering with home care. We're going to be able to identify those patients, and we'll be able to partner and work with them to say, well, this is what EMS can do, because this is within our scope of practice and within our licensure. All EMS folks in New Hampshire are licensed under our office, as well as EMS services. So we have that level of oversight to say, if you're going to do this, you need a license to practice.
Okay.
And we're working with home care to partner and say, they're going to deal with a certain piece of this, but we're going to help because we have a certain skill set that we'll be able to kind of bring to the table.
One of the questions that's related mm-hmm. to what we've just discussed is another thing that you've written, new futures for emergency medical services, that it's locally designed, community-based, collaborative model. It's a model care that leverages the skills of EMS personnel and systems to address community-specific gaps, which I think you've addressed already. I think the go back to a question that we've just discussed is,
yep.
what does community mean? How does one define a community?
That is actually a very local decision. The community may end up being, we can talk about towns, we can talk about counties, but it's really designed by the community. It may end up being hospital catchment area. It may end up being the service area of the EMS
hospital
unit.
Catchment area, what would that mean?
There are 26 acute care hospitals within the state. Half of them are called critical access hospitals, which are 25 beds or less.
Okay.
So the state is covered by those hospitals. When we talk about catchment area, it's generally speaking where the hospital will draw its patients from.
Okay.
That's a general catchment area. It's not black and white. It's not like hitting a road sign going somewhere. It's generally speaking where the flow of patients will come
from.
So
I would call it a marketing area.
Sure.
A market area.
Okay. Yep.
Excellent. Okay. And also we talked about collaborative model of care.
Mm-hmm.
who's collaborating?
Right now, we've talked to several organizations, including the main player is the Home Care Association. We've been talking to the New Hampshire Nurses Association, the Professional Firefighters of New Hampshire, the EMS Association, the Paramedic Association. We've got a small task force that's been working on this since before I was Bureau Chief, when I took over about a year ago. So those are the folks that are collaborating. We're also collaborating with Health and Human Services to figure out how can we do this and how can we move this model forward in somewhat of a pilot fashion initially here, so we can have programs across the state that will be looked at or followed by our office to make sure that we're doing things safely and we're doing things within our protocols or basically our medical orders. And we'll take a look at those over the few years here once they get up and running and figure out, well, you know, what's working and what's not. But the collaboration, it really needs to be on a local level. We're setting up the state framework, but it really needs to be the local level. So it's local home care, it's local hospital, it's local EMS unit, and there may be a few other people within there to try to figure out where are the needs and who can meet them.
Right. So that would be, again, going back to your statement, they're the folks who are going to that group that you mentioned are going to be the group that determines what are the gaps, quote unquote. What are the needs?
Our state level group is really looking at more of the system and how we put it into place. And then it's going to be handed off to the local folks for them to do a local needs assessment. Because like I mentioned, what's the needs in Colebrook and the needs in Bedford are going to be a little bit different, or Manchester. Sure. We're dealing with the framework, but then the locals are really going to deal with their gaps.
How will, we talked a little bit earlier about costing.
Yes.
One of the questions somebody's going to come up with is, how do we make sure this is affordable? If we're going to ask a community, for example, to pick up the responsibility for this particular service, how is that community going to know that it's affordable?
And right now, we're not. Right now, we've got, like I said, those 200 and some odd programs. They are financed a variety of different ways. There's only one state right now that actually has put some Medicare funding in, and we've been very upfront with that. We don't know how some of this is going to be financed. However, at this point in time, a lot of the EMS services that are out there that have expressed some interest are already on duty 24/7. Mm-hmm. So that expense has already been borne. And one of the things we haven't talked about is there are places around the country that are financing this by keeping the patients out of the hospital. There is actually a penalty for some of the hospitals if you have somebody that's readmitted within 30 days. So not only is there a penalty that they don't get paid for that readmission. So remember when I talked about that about 5% of the patients are accounting for about 50% of the costs.
Right.
We're focusing in on, or several of the organizations across the country have been focusing in on some very particular patient populations, people with congestive heart failure or breathing problems, and the congestive heart failure is when you get fluid in your lungs, or some other breathing problems. So they're focusing in on those because they're a significant amount of the patients that are getting readmitted. Mm-hmm. So there's a very targeted patient population that they're working for, or they're working on. There's also a group out there that we call super users, and they're people that are using EMS very frequently. Because we're using or being used
frequent
for
flyers.
A different term.
Yes.
Those super users that are using the system very, very frequently as primary care, but don't necessarily need to be taken in an ambulance. One of the other focuses will be on that particular group. Say, how can we not necessarily generate? Keep in mind that the emergency department is a very expensive place to provide primary care.
Mm-hmm.
Ambulance transportation is also very expensive when it's needed. Very justified. But to use an ambulance service just to merely take someone that does not necessarily need an ambulance is not a good use of resources for a couple different reasons. It's costly. The bill may be borne by the patient or may not be paid, depending on what's the insurance situation and financial situation. And in addition to that, when we have these resources that may be taken out of the system that we have, we may have a much more serious call that happens simultaneously, and now that resource is not available. In addition, we have individuals go to an emergency department that may not necessarily need to be there, so we'll do a triage, and basically it's putting people in order of severity.
Right.
So when you have a lot of people in there, it takes up resources that are really finite. So getting people to a more appropriate location will reduce some of the costs in the emergency departments, will reduce some of the demands on the system that we have now, and it's providing choices.
Nick, how is the EMS service in New Hampshire, or the Bureau, whose ever responsibility it is, going to educate the public? Because I think, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, back in when I was a kid, I remember the ambulances looked like hearses. And it was basically pick up the body, throw the body in the, put the body in the ambulance, send it to the hospital. Certainly it's progressed, as you mentioned, and we all know, it's progressed a long way. This is a major change, I think, in what people perceive emergency medical services to be. How are you going to do that education process?
Well, part of the education is coming down and talking to you, so thank you once again for having me here. I appreciate that. This is part of the process. Discussing it with the stakeholder groups is also part of the process. Once we actually are able to put the framework into place, which I hope will be in the next 6 months, that services will be able to actually apply for the use of the protocol and really start looking at their own community on how they can better serve them. And some of that's already started. There's been a lot of collaboration between home care, VNA, and several emergency medical services around the state already on different particular levels. So marketing is going to be an important thing, and we don't have all the answers yet. But certainly this is a piece of it, and getting some of the word out through home care, through the hospitals, through primary care. We're working on a little bit more of that market strategy.
So over the next year, year and a half, 18 months, families families should see, because families are obviously responsible sometimes when the ambulance does come, are going to be asked questions, and they're going to be asked to make decisions that they probably hadn't been asked to make before.
Yes.
And this is all part of that change. So if they can become aware of that through these processes, it would be a good thing.
Yes. I think a very important piece that people consider is that when they call 911, their assumption is that they're always going to be taken to the emergency department. And I think that's the paradigm shift that we're having right now. Is that because you call 911 does not necessarily mean that's going to be an option. It's not in place yet, but that's really what we're moving towards, is really getting, moving from the transportation care and just bringing someone to an emergency department to much more of a patient-centered focus. Is that because you called an ambulance does not necessarily mean that's what you need. So I think that's one of the things and one of the important take-home messages is that that is going to be a difference when people run into a service that's using mobile integrated healthcare.
And I think it's good to reemphasize that point, and I want to make sure I understand it. To reemphasize that point is the healthcare costs, as we look at them, what we're trying to do, what you're trying to do in your service, is to try to lower those costs to you, to the best of your ability, and at the same time, as good a service, if not better, healthcare services to the folks who need them.
Absolutely. The service, the quality is not going to diminish because you're still getting the same folks on the ambulance you get today. So that quality will still be there. What will improve is part of that quality when we begin to do some of the education of our folks on how to do things a little bit differently. So I only see the quality going up, but I see the quality for the patients going up also, because they're going to have different options instead of just go to the emergency department, which sometimes, believe it or not, even though people call 911, they need help. They don't necessarily need an emergency department, and some of them are aware of that. They just don't know who else to call.
Right. And on the emergency services side, things are happening on the medical profession as well. As I read, doctors now can become emergency medicine qualified or board qualified, which is fairly new, to make sure that those, from a trauma standpoint, emergency standpoint, they're prepared to deal with these and deal with these questions when somebody comes in.
Yes, actually, it's very interesting you bring that up, because that board certification, and I don't have the exact dates, but I think it's a couple of years old now, and we actually have at least two physicians that have taken those boards and passed. And when you think of board certification, you have a specialist in emergency medicine or trauma care. We have a couple of physicians, including our EMS state medical director, Jim Swosey. Dr. Swosey is boarded in emergency medical services, so not just emergency department boarding. He's actually boarded in emergency medical services. So this is a new kind of a paradigm shift for us too, because it really means that there are a few physicians that are very tuned into what happens in EMS.
I think most people are probably aware of the fact that, and we're starting to get close to time, so most people are aware of the fact that many of the emergency medical services are departments or divisions of, or even part of, fire department services. I mean, where you came from, your background. They're also private companies. Fire departments have, it's been determined that about 8% of the time fire departments are fighting fires. I think it's something like 67 or 70%, over 70% of the time, fire departments are involved with emergency medical services.
Yes.
Do you see in time emergency medical services assuming the role of emergency services within a town?
No, I don't see that.
Okay.
I think some of that paradigm shift is already passed.
Okay.
I think a lot of fire departments got into EMS years ago. And I think you're right. I think about nationally, we're looking at about 8% and 10%, or 8 to 10% and about 70%. So a lot of those services have already occurred. This is an addition to what we're providing as far as emergency medicine, but it's almost, we're looking at community medicine in addition to that emergency safety net that will still be there.
All right. And we don't have that much time left. We've got about a couple minutes.
Okay.
Community medical services.
Yeah.
We've talked about gaps and things like that. What will this new environment be like that we can sit, the different communities, rural communities,
yeah,
municipal communities can look at and say, we have a very high quality mm-hmm. medical service community. What will that look like?
I think what it will really look like is that we're going to have basically people taking care of their own community. We have a lot of folks that are providing emergency medical services and responding to emergencies, but we also have a lot of people kind of behind the scenes that unless you're actually getting those services, you're not quite aware of what's available. And once again, that's often a call for 911 or a call to a fire department or private ambulance service or volunteers. Is sometimes we get phone calls because people just don't know who else to call. So this is some more tools in our toolbox that if you don't need an emergency ride to an emergency department, we can hook you up with other services or be able to take care of you to try to keep you in your home.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you very much, Nick, for taking time out.
Thank you.
I know it's really busy right now because you're trying to get folks requalified and budgets certainly are becoming an issue. So I want to thank you very much for the time you've taken to come down and talk to us and our audience about emergency medical services in the future.
Oh,
and
I appreciate it.
I'd hope you'd come back later on, because we've discussed before the show, there are a number mm-hmm. of areas that I think would be of interest to the folks. So thank you very much for coming and joining Longview.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Absolutely.
Having you.
Thanks, Dave.
And thank you, the viewers, for rejoining the Longview. Appreciate your tuning in tonight and watching this program. And if you have ideas that you'd like to have discussed or looked into, please take a look at the contact number at the bottom of the screen, and we'd be willing to look at those ideas. Thanks very much. Good night.